Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And we have a special guest today.
Hello. I'm Josh, otherwise known as Cisco on the forums. I am podcaster Lyle's younger brother. And I decided to join the forums in addition to blood relations because it is a hobby of mine.
So there are other reasons?
Nepotism.
I've always been into role-playing games, comic books, monster movies. Lyle actually got me into all that stuff. So, yeah, just figured I would sign up.
And it's because of your comic book expertise that we asked you to join us this episode.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have an expert on the subject on the podcast.
Because the rest of us usually don't know what we're talking about, so.
We've got all the mileage we could out of Chris's one issue of Superman.
Damn it, he's not going to be able to go.
But at least this way we can listen to someone other than Lyle talk.
We have someone who sounds kind of like Lyle talk. Yeah.
So to research for this, Wayne and I went and watched Captain America, which was still in the theaters in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Caught it on the last day.
As it turned out, yeah.
I didn't go to watch it because my wife didn't want to go out in the rain. So I downloaded it.
Legally.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, crap.
So is that like the policy? You don't go see movies if it's raining?
Apparently so.
Yeah, I could see you'd want to stay inside.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like a movie theater?
Yeah. And I certainly would want to go watch a movie that's no longer playing.
I boned up on quite a few comic book movies. I saw the Green Lantern one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
and the First Class. And
I've seen that. And we, those who listen to Norse Play, Wayne and I had seen Thor.
We go on a lot of dates, don't we?
You know, people could have imagined that women were with us. We didn't have to say it was just the two of us.
I was going to say, we didn't necessarily mean that the date was with each other.
Oh, that's
true. I guess it kind of ruined that. I thought Captain America was okay for what it was.
Josh, you've seen them all, right? You've seen Green Lantern as well.
No, I haven't seen Green Lantern. I've heard some pretty lousy reviews of that.
Yeah, it wasn't that great.
Yeah, and I just decided I'll just save my money, see if I can download it legally.
Or just wait for it on DVD.
It is on DVD now, here in Canada. Likewise with Captain America First Class and Thor.
First Class is on DVD here.
And I'm with you.
And so is Thor.
That's the best one.
Okay.
What?
Well, I thought it was the best one. First Class.
Yeah, I would say First Class is the best, then Captain America, then Thor, and I hadn't seen Green Lantern.
I would have to say I prefer Captain America the best. Just X-Men First Class does redeem the franchise after the debacle that was Last Stand. But, you know, it's still kind of more the same.
Yeah. I don't know, there are some really, like, fresh ideas on how to use the powers. Like, that one teleporting guy was grabbing people and throwing them from really high. It wasn't the ending or anything like that.
That's not a spoiler. A teleporting guy
on an X-Men movie.
But it was well put together. Like, I really like J.J. Abrams, so I thought it was well done. Yeah.
So lots of lens flares?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was pretty restrained, that with J.J. Abrams. It wasn't Star Trek, Lens Flare.
Or what's that other
Cloverfield.
One? I was thinking...
Cloverfield was at night. Was there Lens Flare there?
Super 8, yes, that's right, yeah.
Oh, the movie about the 8 superheroes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. my wife, she didn't know the plot of it at all, so when there is a scene where they're sitting at a train station and this military king comes through, and it's not a spoiler, it's part of the movie that it crashes, and she's like, oh, is this where they get their superpowers? She just assumed that Super 8 was about 8 young superheroes.
I was going to say, what do you think of Captain America, Josh? Because, like I said, I thought it was okay for what it was.
What does that mean? Because don't you then have to define what it was?
I guess so. So for a superhero movie. So it's not like...
Oh, okay.
It's not the movie equivalent of, like, high literature, is what I'm saying.
For Schindler's List, it was terrible. But...
All right, I guess that is a little bit confusing.
They don't even mention the Jews.
But... I don't know. It just seemed to incorporate, like, various interpretations of the character. It was both classic Captain America, ultimate Captain America, and the Captain America that you see in the new cartoons now. For example, in the new cartoon series that's out, they obviously they can't mention Nazis.
Right.
So instead,
why can't they?
It's not politically correct anymore, I guess.
Yeah, it's not politically correct, I guess.
Yeah, that's what confused Wayne and I. Sorry to cut you off. But the fact that they quickly switch from Nazis to Hydra.
Yeah.
It may have something to do with marketing in Germany. Like, isn't showing the swastika illegal?
I don't know if it's legal, but it's not in kind of bad taste.
Hydra did the Holocaust or something. They all have red skulls.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of bugged me a little bit.
Well, in the movie, they did mention Nazis, but Hydra was like a separate cell, like it was their special technology division, I believe it was.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like, sorry, I didn't mean to catch you up, but like, watching that, you're kind of like, well, if Hydra has all this stuff and they're their secret cell, then I don't see how Germany lost World War II. You know, like, even though they eventually broke away, I almost would have, you know, and again, not having known the Captain America story, I would have preferred it if Hydra was separate all the way from the beginning, like right at the beginning, just a separate entity. I think that would have made a little bit more sense, story-wise.
But it's so easy to make them evil if they're Nazis.
Or just keep them evil and not have those his tanks in the parking lot that no one uses.
The good guys used them.
Yeah, it's funny. But the Hydra guy goes, oh, inside. I'm inside.
So wait, that's what the armor is for? You get inside of it and stops?
I thought it just dressed up the place. Because you think the Nazis, when they're going, yeah, where are these secret weapons? And he's like, didn't you just walk by, like, 50 of them? And he goes, oh, yeah, okay, I guess my question is, why aren't we using these secret weapons?
I don't know, like, between Captain America and Thor, those two Avenger movies, I like Thor a little bit better.
Whoa.
Because, like, I saw him as being about the same kind of quality, same kind of genre and feeling, tone as well. But Thor, I don't know, just the whole idea of Thor is a little bit more ridiculous. You know, this Norse god who comes down in strange colors and stuff. So Captain America being more realistic was harder. It was harder to suspend my disbelief than it was for Thor. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, I can see what you're saying,
I see what you're saying, too. Just the way I see it is that Thor is more comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, he is this Norse god, and here he is interacting with these mortals.
Yeah.
Captain America is more action-oriented.
I'd say Thor failed my stay-awake-through-the-whole-movie test.
Yeah, I think I looked over.
You didn't like Thor, though.
I was asleep.
So the second act, I slept through most of that.
Really?
But, you know, they both serve the same purpose. They're right, to introduce the characters before the Avengers movie, Captain America and Thor. And I just found the Captain America story more compelling, whereas the Thor story kind of seemed...
kind of boring and slow.
Boring, slow, and why did they have Natalie Portman? Whereas in the Captain America story, the love interest seemed more...
Genuine,
yeah, and how it grew seemed more organic and...
Well, Natalie
and more
Portman...
touching. Whereas in Thor, it was like, oh, now he has reason to go back. And you're like, oh, really? Why?
Well, Natalie Portman was Jane Foster. And Jane Foster was the love interest originally in the comic books.
There's one thing to just give the same name to the character. And there's another thing to make it make sense in the movie. That's why I don't mind if they change stuff to fit it into the movie.
Well, sorry to cut you off. I guess I do agree that she was kind of shoehorned in there. But from a movie-making standpoint, you have to have that female lead. And since Thor was on Earth, like, through most of the movie, they probably couldn't use Sif the whole time.
Yeah, that makes sense. He was trapped on Earth, so.
So it makes sense to use a Midgardian or human woman.
Yeah, she was pretty much like a living, breathing device.
Yeah, I kind of saw it the same way.
Because it's like, oh, well, that's now his connection to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was Natalie Portman in the Star Wars prequels, other than the living, breathing
those
device?
Don't exist. She was nothing because that movie isn't real.
She was an incubator. She was pre-Luke, pre-Leia.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed First Class. I thought from start to finish, it introduced the characters well. It was also a good story to follow.
Yeah, entertaining.
Yeah.
Well acted.
Yeah, I really liked Michael, is it Fassbender, who played Magneto?
Don't know his name, but I agree, he did a good job in that movie, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why he was using the kind of an American accent when he was speaking English, since the character's supposed to be German.
Mm.
and he can actually speak German. And I guess his other heritage was Irish, so I remember when he was doing his little speech at the end, it started slipping into Irish, so I just think he didn't have to have an American accent. Yeah.
But he seemed like he spoke all of the different languages perfectly, pure comic book style.
But isn't Professor X American?
In the movie, he was British, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart was British, so it makes sense for the new actor.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, are they just doing it because Patrick Stewart?
I didn't catch that, but yeah, totally.
And then I was thinking about, why did they cast Patrick Stewart other than the fact that he was bald? Because he's not actually in a wheelchair.
Mm. That's because he's such a great actor.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Number one.
Well, Stephen Hawking had other obligations.
He refused to shave his head.
We must stop Magneto.
I'm glad someone else did that joke. So
calm yourself. Calm your... Oh, it's already finished. Again. Could you type faster?
Like it says, pre-programmed sayings.
Is that Professor X, Stephen Hawking, or Roger Ebert speaking right now? All right. Well, you went to the Comic-Con in Montreal.
Yes, I did.
Josh? Sorry.
Because all three of us are in Montreal. Yeah.
Apparently, I'm Stephen Hawking. Yeah, he's going to give me some public speaking tips later.
Is it intone more?
Try to use more fluency.
No, listen to me.
Is it called public
speaking?
We're all
going to hell.
Shouldn't it be called public typing?
Public. Please put more feeling in your presentation. Sorry, Josh.
Quite all right.
And you met a pretty big name in comics.
Stephen Hawking.
Yes, actually. I met Stan Lee.
Ooh.
It was actually kind of rushed, so it wasn't that cool. It was still, you know, pretty amazing for me being a little comic book nerd. But I waited 3 hours in line for a 3-second exchange.
Hmm. It's $50, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow. And what was the exchange? Hi?
Not even. He signed my comic book, and I had to get out of line.
Wow.
What was the comic book?
It was the 40th anniversary special of the Mr. Fantastic and Invisible Woman wedding.
Okay.
Hmm. You think he could just have, like...
He's in it.
You think he just had, like, a rubber stamp that's his signature?
Stanley. And you also met Burt Ward?
Burt Ward and Adam West, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Burt Ward, I don't know if he's among the listeners, but I honestly kind of felt bad.
He won't just be anymore.
Well, it's just that, no disrespect to Burt Ward, but Adam West's line was at least 3 times the size. Mm-mm. And the there's Burt Ward.
True, yeah.
Well, yeah, he was Robin, but still, he was Robin. You know, he is still kind of an important figure in geekdom.
If you only had time for one, which would you choose?
Definitely Adam
exactly.
West.
Exactly.
How is
but
it,
that's
though,
the thing, I did have time for two.
And did you do both?
Adam West was late getting out, and there was a lineup, so I figured, well, I'll just cut out this line and go into the Burt Ward line, which is right beside it. And I still had time to kill.
Did you get to talk to either of them?
Get back into the Burt Ward line. Hey, again.
You look lonely.
Burt Ward was very friendly, actually. He did sign my comic book. I had him sign Killing Joke.
That's good.
Cool. Yeah.
The one where he dies.
No, that was Death in the Family.
Oh, Death in the Family. That's right. Yeah.
And still no, because that
the killing
was
joke.
The Jason
was Robin
Todd.
Even in that?
No. Wait.
That was the Jason Todd Robin. Burt Ward played the Dick Grayson Robin.
Yeah.
The original.
And I realize Burt Ward is not really Robin. Yeah. But sorry, I don't recall Robin in the Killing Joke.
He wasn't, I admit. It's just, you know, he's still part of the Batman mythos, and I didn't have a good Robin issue. I don't actually own Death in the Family.
I get you.
Which, again, wouldn't be the same Robin. Adam West actually read my comic book. I had him sign Long Halloween.
That might explain the long line.
I was just about to say that. He's like, he's got to read every comic book.
Oh, no. It's just, it was like a week before my birthday, so I said, oh, could you put to... I don't know, happy birthday or something like that. And he did. And then he paused, and he's like, oh, I don't think I've read this one. I'm like, oh, it's a good story. He reads a couple pages of it, looks at me, and says, oh, it's pretty cool. Here you go. And meanwhile, my inner child was like, holy crap, Batman just read Batman!
And your inner adult says, I better move it along because the line behind me is really, really long.
True.
And I'm not turning 14 on my birthday. And you also dressed up for the Comic-Con.
Yes, I was. I was Captain America.
Cool.
Did you have your shield?
I did, yeah. And I got quite a few requests for pictures from adult age geeks, children, cosplay chicks.
Yeah, a couple of them. I saw the picture with Wonder Woman and Supergirl.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. Definitely a highlight.
Cool.
I also got a few pictures with some, I don't want to say celebrities because they're not very well known, but there were people that were doing like promotions for web comics, web series, their own podcasts, for example. And they were dressed up as characters and they wanted, some of them actually wanted me as publicity for their websites.
Oh, wow. Only if you got paid though, right?
No, sadly. If I did charge admission for every picture that was taken, I actually would have been a very rich man. Just waiting for a friend of mine who went with me to get his picture taken with the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Oh, okay.
Like 20 requests.
Wow.
So was your line longer or shorter than Burt Ward's?
Definitely longer. Oh, it got to the point where I almost couldn't enjoy the Comic-Con. Not that I minded getting my picture taken. That was certainly fun. But it's like I'm trying to check out the classic Adam West Batmobile, and I'm just like oohing and aahing over this, or trying to buy a comic book from one of the dealers that were there. And meanwhile, everybody's like, can I get a picture? Can I get a picture? Can I get a picture? I'm like, in a minute.
Well, you know what they say. With a great costume comes great responsibility.
Nice.
You have a duty to the fans.
So what's the big news in comics, Josh?
I guess the biggest news is the new DC 52.
Mm-hmm. How are you liking that?
Not especially. Just
I tried to read Frankenstein Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. yesterday.
I haven't got a chance to read that yet. Or Demon Knight, which is another one that you recommended. I've been mainly sticking with the two flagship characters, Superman and Batman.
Well, yeah. That's about 40 of the comics right there.
Yeah.
From what you recommend.
52 new titles, 30 of them Batman.
Yeah, from what you were saying the other night, it doesn't sound like that hot of a reboot, hey?
It's, I don't think it even really qualifies as a reboot. It just seems like a continuation from the story that was already in place. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this counts as a spoiler, but there's a new Robin who is Damian, the illegitimate child of Batman and Talia al Ghul, and he's a psychopath. Batman keeps having to have to curb Damian's killer instinct.
Yeesh.
So he's an evil Robin.
I guess that is one way to say it.
Wasn't that like and, Jason Todd a bit?
Jason Todd was more of a jerk.
Okay.
He wasn't evil. I mean, he didn't kill things. He just wanted to beat people up. What else do I object to? Well, in case you're wondering what happened to the Tim Drake Robin, he has adopted a new persona. Kind of like Nightwing, I suppose, except now it's Red Robin, which is kind of lazy.
Isn't that from Kingdom Come?
I don't remember if that was it. I just know Red Robin is also the name of an American fast food franchise.
And it's delicious.
I'm sure it's more related to Kingdom Come.
Cover the burgers in cheese. Oh, it's so good.
Although there is a new sidekick called Big Boy. And one In-N-Out Burger. They're not even trying.
McBatman.
Well, are they really trying with Robin? I mean, the name Robin just kind of sticks out. You got Batman, Batgirl, Bat-Hound, Bat-Mite, Nightwing, Robin. It's not even a frightened bird.
Well, I'm sure if you get enough of them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Even a pigeon would be dangerous.
somebody dressed in a costume coming at you with a bow stick, even if they're called pigeon, that is a little scary.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose unless they're a child.
I was going to say, out of curiosity, since you said they're not, like, reboots, because my impression was, like, DC has done this to try and...
Cut you off, Wayne. Aren't they calling it a relaunch?
Well,
I know this is hair-splitting, but I think they split it.
Well, it just seems to be the Batman title is a continuation, but Superman has actually been relaunched, totally. It's like, basically starting from scratch with Superman. But Batman is still the same guy, which is a little confusing, I admit. I really don't know how else to explain it, but first issue of Action Comics has basically Superman is just starting out. he hasn't, he's not married to Lois Lane anymore. He's just starting as a superhero. Not many people really know who he is. There's none of that. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
It's just a Robin.
It's Robin.
It's some guy flying.
It's Sorry. Some guy in a t-shirt and jeans. That's his new costume. It's a t-shirt and jeans. Oddly, where does he get a Superman t-shirt?
Markers.
Comic-Con?
Yeah, I was thinking Comic-Con.
Well, he doesn't exist, or at least he doesn't have the history. So it's not like he would...
Couldn't he jump to the alternate universe where he did?
I mean, yeah.
Okay, I've decided to fight crime. What should my first action be? But merchandising!
Isn't it like a blue t-shirt with just an S on it?
Yeah. So, no, but it's the Superman logo still.
Yeah. But, it's like sorry, how did he come up with it?
He put
What's
it.
That?
Did he go into a store and buy the Superman logo?
That's not really established, but it is still the same Superman logo.
Right, so he probably made it.
Maybe. But another thing is that they have changed some of the personalities of the characters. For instance, there is a panel in, I believe it's The Dark Knight, where Batman goes into Arkham Asylum and he shouts, "This is Batman! Come out with your hands up!"
Yeah, it doesn't seem very Batman-y.
Yeah, it seems more Adam West Batman than Chris Nolan Batman, which I suppose they're trying to tie into. And Superman actually starts out with him threatening to throw a guy off a building if he doesn't confess to a crime. That's not the Superman I grew up with. Superman I grew up with is a Boy Scout.
Well, you mentioned that the other day, but I think I can see Superman making an empty threat like that. Like, the difference between Superman and Batman is that Batman would actually drop the guy 100 feet and then catch him and then say, "I'm going to drop you the West Way if you don't tell me anything." But Superman, I could see him, like, holding somebody up there and then saying, tell me what I want to know. I suppose they don't actually say, "or I'm going to drop you," but...
But he does drop the guy.
Oh, he does. Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. That is
sorry,
very Batman-y.
Yeah. It just brought to mind, like, there was an episode of the Justice League animated series where Batman is taken out of action. So Superman goes down to interrogate a criminal, Copperhead. And Copperhead just laughs. He's like, "What are you going to do? Give me a wedgie? You're the big blue Boy Scout." And they can't get any information out of Copperhead because they don't have Batman there to intimidate anybody.
Hmm. Well, what would Batman do?
Well, he's Batman.
Oh, Batman's actually scary, and he doesn't care. He probably would beat Copperhead up until he confessed. Superman, just the Superman I grew up with, would not.
Would Batman actually beat somebody, a confession out of somebody?
Well, he's beaten one out of the Joker a couple times in the comic books.
Isn't it usually presented, though, is that he's fighting the Joker, as opposed to the guy sitting, like, handcuffed to the
And
table?
Also, you don't really need a confession out of the Joker.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you've read Killing Joke.
Yeah.
It basically starts out with Batman goes into Arkham Asylum, the Joker's sitting there in the cell, and I don't know if this counts as a spoiler, because Killing Joke is a fairly old comic book.
Yeah, 80s, it's okay.
Yeah, okay. So it turns out that the guy in the cell is really just a guy that's made up to look like the Joker.
Right.
And he starts beating on that guy. And it's not until that guy starts screaming for help that Commissioner Gordon comes in. He's like, "Okay, you know the rules," and puts a stop to it. So, you know, if he's locked in an interrogation room with Copperhead, he probably would smack Copperhead around a little bit. Well, there's also the Dark Knight beats the living grunt out of the Heath Ledger Joker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now
I mean, the first thing he does, he smacks the Heath Ledger Joker's head into the table. That doesn't even start with the interrogation. It's just, "I'm going to hit you now."
Yeah.
If you're a supervillain, though, how scary is getting your head hit into the table?
Well, it still hurts.
Depends what genre of supervillain you are. If you're the gadget guy, it's going to hurt a lot.
"I'll catch you next time. Ouch!"
I didn't mean that gadget guy. I meant, like, you know, a regular guy. I meant, like, the Tony Stark, right? Like, his power is the suit or his gadgets, and he's just this, like, little guy sitting there. It's like, "Oh."
Batman, get him out of the suit before you start beating on him. Yeah, that's really doing a number on my knuckle.
I was just wondering about, if it's a relaunch, then I thought the goal was for DC to try and get, like, new readers, essentially. And I assumed a relaunch, even if it wasn't a reboot, would be geared so that new readers could jump on easily, but from what you've said, that doesn't really seem to be the case, at least not with all the titles that they've done.
Not with all the titles, but certainly with Superman, and it does seem to be the case with the Justice League. I've read a preview of it. It came when I came to pick up my subscriptions at my local comic book store, and Batman is chasing this monster through Gotham City, and Green Lantern stops the monster and looks at Batman and is like, "You're real?" So I guess that was to lead into how they're starting from scratch with the Justice League.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what Batman said to Green Lantern.
It stopped there, but if I was Batman, it'd be like, okay, you're the guy with a magic ring that was given to you by space aliens. I'm a guy in the suit.
I remember in some reboots with Superman, though, they would make reference to this guy who's like a bat, and he's kind of like this legend in Gotham.
I never really understood that either. Just,
why not? They're... Like, somebody's going around, he's dressed like a bat, and he's cleaning up the criminal element, and no one's met him.
That makes sense. Batman's very secretive.
And... Yeah. So he becomes Batman's a legend. And I think even in the, when they were talking about, like, for example, Man of Steel, which was the 80s reboot of Superman by John Byrne, I think around that time Batman starts his career before Superman.
Yeah, and they've done that before,
yeah.
Or I guess I should say since, with the animated series. There was actually an episode of Superman where Superman's starting out, and he's talking to Ma and Pa Kent, and they're like, well, we don't want people to think that you're like that nut in Gotham City.
But Superman's parents are dead now, right? The Kents?
Yes,
yes. Yeah, I don't like that. Of all the things I've heard, that's the thing I've liked the least, because I really like the relationship he had with his parents. And I like that in the Smallville TV series. I thought that was a really good... I think those were the best parts, like how he interacts with his parents and how they raise him, and that shows why he would not be the kind of guy that would hold them over the building.
But mm-hmm. he is now.
Yeah, so maybe because he died, yeah.
Well, I just agree with you there. Like, that is... an essential element of the
sorry,
character.
Josh, we're losing you, disagreeing. And we've lost Josh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry, go ahead, Josh.
No, I do agree with you there, that you know, that is an essential part of the character. He's just, he's this Kansas farm boy who has superpowers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was born a Kryptonian, but he was raised just this nice guy.
That's a big part of that Kingdom Come book as well. You know, make the man more important than the super.
Yeah.
Mm. And I get that they are trying to do, like, a gritty reboot to attract more readers, like Wayne said, especially younger readers. It's just not everything needs to be gritty.
Especially if you're going for the younger readers, that might chase away their parents.
Yeah, they tried the paramilitary approach, like, in the 90s, and that just a really bad decade for comics.
Yeah,
in there was story, that, quality of story, and sales.
That's probably why I got out of it, because that's one
why
of my friends were collecting comic books.
I was also, like, not into all the five different covers for one comic book.
Mm. Yeah, that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
Well, Marvel did kind of almost like a 52 thing, where they did, like, Heroes Reborn, I believe it was called.
No, that kind of bombed.
It did, but they kind of recovered by incorporating it into an existing story in, like, the main Marvel universe. It's like, shortly before that happened, there was that Onslaught story, where, so many of the main characters had died, but these were the same characters that were being relaunched with, like, all new origins in Heroes Reborn. But then when they realized that, okay, these are tanking, stop, they said, oh, well, Franklin Richards, the son of Mr. Fantastic, used his psychic powers to teleport all the good heroes to an alternate dimension, at the time of their death, and then they were reborn, and then he brought them back.
Man, kind of a continuity sometimes is so weak.
Did somebody get a high five in that room, that writer's room? That's it. That's the one.
Well, I mean, if the choice is have the things continue to bomb, or find some way to scramble to, like, bring them back into a storyline, I think it's like, well, it's implausible, but it does the job. Let's go with it.
Well, I understand, you know, the manager comes down and says, you know, bring this guy back and start making money, or you're fired.
And he's like, whoa.
Okay, psychic power, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Like, whoa, 3 months ago you had me kill him off, now I'm going to bring him back?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's like the Scarlet Witch.
Done that?
Marvel does that a lot. Like, the Scarlet Witch, where her children were all, like, part of her powers. She kind of wished them into existence.
Yeah, there's that.
I thought what the Marvel Comics did with the Ultimate line, I thought that was really good. They just had a separate universe where people could jump on and they could tell different stories. And they seemed to have borrowed heavily for that for the movies.
They do, especially with Samuel Jackson playing Nick Fury.
Yeah.
But in some elements it works, in some it doesn't. For example, I'm not a big fan of Ultimate Fantastic Four.
But you like Marvel Zombies, and that came from Ultimate Fantastic Four, didn't it?
It did, but, you know, they just use that as a springboard because, you know, they have had the characters that deal with alternate Earths. And then again, they could have still used the original Fantastic Four because they've dealt with alternate Earths, too. My big objection is their kids. I don't think Mr. Fantastic is above, like, 20. Well, and I guess they want
kids.
Well, that's a good point. They do want to make it more relatable. But which is more believable? This guy that's gone to university, gone to several universities, and gotten several degrees,
yeah,
who is a super genius, or this guy that's basically Harry Potter with a calculator?
Yeah, but you can have a child prodigy.
I guess, but child prodigy versus guy that's able to build a teleporter.
Child prodigy wins. If you're marketing for kids, it is.
No way, teleporter's totally cooler.
Oh, no, I'm saying the kid could build the teleporter.
Oh, I meant.
Do both.
Yeah.
Child prodigy builds the teleporter.
I guess. But my other
I'm getting high fives in the writer's room.
You're a genius, Clough.
No, I'm thinking, not teleporter.
Super machine. Strong and flies.
Laser beams from the eyes.
Well, another thing, too, is that it just seems more episodic. Like, okay, you take the Ultimate X-Men, and it just introduces all the characters pretty much at once. Like, okay, these are the evil mutants, these are the X-Men.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, throughout the series, you introduce new characters like Wolverine, Shadowcat, Mr. Sinister, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But with Ultimate Fantastic Four, it's like, okay, we're going to start off with the Fantastic Four, and they're going to fight Mole Man, because they do in the original. And now we're going to have Dr. Doom. And now we're going to have Diablo. And now we're going to have Dr. Doom again. And now we're going to have Psycho Man and Annihilus. And it's just one after the other.
Isn't that kind of comic books in general?
It is, but...
Busted, Josh. You hate comic books.
Sorry.
I was going to say, as someone who tried to collect comic books and ultimately gave up, because of, as Lyle said, like the multiple covers for the same issue, where like the storylines and the crossovers that made it hard to collect one title, I would actually argue that the episodic nature would be better to hook new readers, or like people trying to jump on, because, okay, even if you come on in the middle, like maybe you're like an episode or like an issue or two behind or in front of, but then there's a new villain who comes on, and yeah, it is episodic, it kind of resets, and if it's a self-contained little story, then if I like that, then I can go back and, you know, get sort of previous issues, or I'll stay with this title and kind of follow it until they switch over to something else. But yeah, if it comes in the middle of like a big story, then it's, I don't know, I would argue kind of harder to hook those new readers. So
that's true. It's just that one of the things I like the most about the regular Marvel Universe is that it's all basically one big story. For example, back in, I think it was the 90s, they had a story where they were having a baseball game, and this was an Avengers story. The Avengers went to a baseball game, and they figured, okay, well, baseball game, that's probably going to be in the news, so we need somebody to take pictures. Well, who do we have that can take pictures? Peter Parker. He's a photographer. Conversely, in a issue of Spider-Man, you see two characters, like peripheral characters. I think it was Flash Thompson and his girlfriend at the time, are walking down the street talking, and behind them are Colossus and Wolverine in their regular clothes. So it's more like the characters can all interact in the same story, almost. They're all still doing their own thing, but it's not all, okay, well, superhero A is doing this, superhero B is doing this, superhero C is doing this.
I don't know, I kind of see that as just like fanboy drops. Same reason in movies, like the G.I. Joe movie where they drop the line, "Yo, Joe!" something just for fans of it to go, "Oh, I know that thing."
Yeah, and they do that in First Class as well. Like, they bring in, I'm not going to say who, because that would be a spoiler, but they bring in some established characters.
Isn't it essentially the same as like product placement?
Yeah, I suppose.
For their
other lines they have going.
Hmm.
I think the 90s were really bad for, like, overusing certain characters, like Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine, definitely.
And I think they're still overusing him. Hmm. He's the hardest working man in comics.
Wow.
God, bad.
Oh, here's something that I actually don't like. Sorry to sound like Mr. Negative. They've changed Wolverine's origin.
Oh, he's American now?
Yes. Was born in the States and raised in Canada.
Why did they discontinue that?
I have no idea. I'm like, maybe they decided he's such a cool character.
We didn't know he was going to be this popular when we made him. Canadian.
Canadians can keep Sasquatch.
Well, they discontinued Alpha. They discontinued Alpha Flight. They've taken away Wolverine. Who's left for Canadian superheroes? Deadpool.
Is he Canadian?
He is Canadian, yeah. And
Sabretooth?
He's a psychopath. Oh, well, Sabretooth is even more of a psychopath.
I think they're trying to send a message here. Yeah. Lyle, stop! No!
Don't mess with Canada!
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
It does.
He's still raised in Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, raised in Canada. It's not the same.
Pseudo-Canadian.
Just lost all our immigrant listeners. What are you saying? I'm not a real Canadian.
Citizenship.
No, I thought it would increase your immigration, because it's like, oh, Wolverine was raised in Canada? Well, then it must be awesome.
Was he really, like, wimpy when he's born, and then he goes to Canada and toughens
bulks
up?
He becomes a lumberjack. That's
we're
going to
give
up.
Some claws, eh?
Actually, he does become a lumberjack. I don't know if you guys have read Wolverine Origins. It's like that was a big deal a few years ago where they finally revealed the origin.
Yeah,
which
from Alberta.
Change. Yeah, he's from Alberta.
Oh, you know why they did the origin story for Wolverine?
Why?
Because they were starting the movies, and we never really wanted to reveal his actual origins. And then, like, but if we don't do it, the movies are going to.
Mm-hmm.
So we may as well get in there.
Well, that's not even what the guy who created Wolverine wanted to do. He actually wasn't even supposed to be a human mutant. They kept
Wolverine.
Yes, actually.
He was supposed to be an actual Wolverine.
Actually, that's what it's
actually
like.
Yes. He was supposed to be an actual Wolverine who mutated into a human.
Well, that explains to
some high fives are going along there.
Yeah. I think high fives are going along the people that changed it.
Well, it does make
he's left the room.
Yeah, exactly. And then when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hit big, he was like, see? Well, just to get into the story, I think this is a good element that we can use when we make role-playing games, because what I would say now that what they're doing is they're really playing to the trade paperback market. And I don't know if digital comics is going to change this, but they're basically making like four to six issue story arcs.
That's
real self-contained stories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's when we're going to now move on to like comic book elements we'd use in games. And that's certainly one that I would use. It's like, as a gaming group that struggles with scheduling a lot, is creating a 5 to 6 session story. Yeah, and you can continue if everybody's really enjoying that. That's great, because then you can just move on to the next 5 to 6 session story.
Mm-hmm.
And you can link them a little bit.
Yeah, with that you could do a major story arc where you are chasing the central villain over several issues, quote-unquote, of a comic book story arc. Although it doesn't necessarily have to be a comic book story. It could be fantasy, sci-fi, what have you. You have it start out with a small crime or crisis that your heroes have to intervene in, and they get wind of this villain, who they then have to chase over several gaming sessions until he finally reveals his fiendish master plan.
I think that's kind of a good argument for having multiple villains. Because if you do that, then the Game Master has given themselves the, I don't know, like I'm figuring if you only have one villain, and the first mini arc ends with, you know, them defeating that villain or tossing him in jail, then it's like, oh, the next arc starts up, and Dr. Doom is back. You're like, wait, hold on. How did he break out, you know? So I think that's why you would...
Psychic powers, high five!
Yeah, exactly. Or like Batman with Arkham Asylum, probably like the least secure asylum ever, since people are constantly breaking out.
Doctor, we really need to do something about that revolving door.
Yeah, exactly.
That big gaping hole in the wall over there.
Yeah, but that said, like, I think comic books, yeah, I think the way they present their stories and the villains, how they come in and go out, I think that really goes well towards gaming, you know? Especially that kind of, like we were saying just before, the fanboy service, you see the little hints of things from past adventures, whatever. Mm. Players would get a kick out of that, I reckon.
Yeah.
I know I would, anyway.
Yeah.
And a reoccurring villain can be a rich villain.
Absolutely.
Rich as in... not wealthy.
So only rich villains can be reoccurring villains?
You're part of the 1%.
Oh, well, think about it. Dr. Doom has his own country. He's a rich villain.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Apocalypse has his own planet.
Yeah, Lex Luthor, that's exactly what I was intending.
But no, you could certainly do that, where it's you have multiple villains. Perhaps you could have them team up. You have, like, a group of henchmen that you have to get through them before you get to the central villain. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you have to fight Scorpion, Sandman, and what have you before you get to the Green Goblin.
Hydra-Man.
Yeah, actually, comic books are good for that, too, because the villains tend to be really varied. You know, they're got completely different costumes and power sets, which is definitely a strength. Like, I've done some campaigns, my most recent one, in fact, where the bad guys are kind of just very similar to each other, so by the end it was almost like you're fighting the same guy.
Yeah, we talked about that in cartoons.
Yeah.
Where you give people, like, real distinctive costumes or names.
Personalities.
Yeah. Gravex.
Well, if you give him a costume and a name, you don't really have to give him a personality.
And that's what I rely on.
But if it's also a recurring villain, I think he'll invest more time in his development.
And just naturally, he'll be more developed. I mean, there's only so much you can do when you're pre-planning a guy, but when he meets the players, he grows just naturally. So.
Yeah.
Oh. And then you get to use those events again, like you said, dropping things from past adventures. So if you have the recurring villain, it's like, when you beat me the last time, you did this.
Yeah,
now I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. It wouldn't seem like the GM is cheating.
Right, because the players already went through that, and they know exactly. They have the same information that the villain does. So.
Yeah,
even if he is cheating.
Another thing is that with a recurring villain where it's always the same villain, like, for example, He-Man always fought Skeletor.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very rarely did he ever fight anybody else. And I think there's maybe like two episodes where he fought, you know, not Skeletor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that action figure.
Not Skeletor.
It's an empty blister. We did say not.
Your players can actually get kind of bored of where it's more of the same.
Yeah.
Especially if you're using, like, let's say your villain's motivation or modus operandi is he's going to be the magic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's going to conjure demons and zombies or what have you to menace your players. He can still do different things with magic, but it's still going to be magic. Now, if you throw in, say, a high-tech villain, he's got robots, teleporters, time machines, whatever, he can do other stuff.
So robot zombies.
Yeah.
Robot demons.
I'm thinking demons that go through time.
Yeah. He teleports in some zombie.
But, like, it's hard to do, too, though. The more realistic you get, the less easy it is to vary those people. Especially because if you have this top villain, he's probably going to teach his henchmen how to summon demons and zombies and things like that. So it would only make sense that they're similar, but that's not necessarily as entertaining.
Now, one element that you guys were talking about before the podcast was frames.
It was less us, it was more Wayne, and it was less talking and more of a rant. But
I think I ranted. All right, so I was going to say, and I'm not going to rant. I've tried to read comic books in the past, and
words were too big.
Yeah, the words were too big. No, just some frames I found were really cluttered, especially with like action lines or weird camera angles or just other stuff. And it was, for me at least, it was difficult to tell what was actually happening in the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole point of a comic book is you're telling a story mostly with images, and if you can't tell what's going on in the picture, then I lose interest. And I found that sometimes happened with manga, with since it's only the one color.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I read that Civil War, I thought that was a really good example and of well laid out frames. And Chris, you said, yeah, well, they're all square. And that didn't bother me because I think it was more important to convey the information.
There's a lot of rectangles.
Yeah, there are rectangles. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was more more important to convey the information clearly.
I screw those up.
All right. Then to make them look interesting.
I think the reason that Civil War was laid out well and the way it worked is it was continuous. They didn't vary the designs. It was kind of a certain set height of different rectangles going down the page. And sometimes they subdivided them, but mostly it was just kind of a scroll down view. Whereas a lot of other ones, I've seen people playing with it. They'll make like a circular frame or make something bursting out of a frame or frames inset within another one. Right. I don't think it's necessarily the frames themselves. It has to do with the design of the page. Like, the one I was showing you guys earlier, David Mack with the Kabuki series, mm-hmm. and the book Metamorphosis specifically, fantastic comic, by the way. He's really good at designing the elements so that it draws your eyes across the page in the order that he wants it to. There's one scene where she's running across a room fighting a bunch of guards, and you can see the path that she takes and each guard that she punches in order, and you just naturally follow it. It's really well made.
They kind of did that in Civil War. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a section when Spider-Man is jumping around, and the frames are much smaller, mm-hmm. and each one is like a snapshot of a rapid succession of what would be his movement.
Yeah.
And I really liked how they put... He was having a conversation, but it was one word per frame.
Mm-hmm.
So it really lent itself to the fact that here you're seeing motion, even though they're static images.
Yeah.
And I was thinking how you could use that in a game... And one of the ways you could do it is, most of the time, at least in combat, when you describe a combat round, the round ends at the end of the action that the players are doing. But if you look at a comic book, they want to show motion, and so the frames depict the action as it's being done, right? So, it's not the guy lying on his back after the punch, it's Spider-Man with his arm extended and the guy reeling back. And I was thinking it would be kind of difficult to do that in a game, but if the game master described the end of a combat round as a snapshot of this dynamic action, not the end of the action, but kind of when it's still occurring,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be a way to give a game a sort of comic book-esque feel.
So, for example, when the fighter goes up and he rolls to hit and he rolls damage, like he's done damage, but, for example, you ended on staying and your sword is stuck in his chest.
Yeah.
And then it's whoever is the next turn.
Either that or, like, you make the roll, right? The sword swings down, you do damage, and you end the description with the foe reeling backwards, you know, and depending on how graphic it is, the spurt of blood coming up.
Isn't that kind of what you do regularly, though? Or do you mean like it's after the foe's already moved and everything just kind of resets to what do you do now?
Well, I kind of imagined like a normal one when you do the punch, you would probably describe the guy as, I don't know, probably, like, I think...
I see.
They kind of like...
Each action has a reaction kind of thing?
Well, I think like a normal combat round, you kind of reset to where everybody's kind of ready to take an action again, and then you go and you finish the action. I'm thinking if you would just like... back it up a few seconds.
I'm not sure how that would work, because in the game combat, you need to roll the dice, so you have finality there. Your action, the consequences of your action have been decided, so it's kind of hard to go back a step.
Well, I'm thinking, like, to use that Spider-Man example, right? After he's thrown a punch, right? If the guy's already reeling back, the player essentially made the roll and did damage because he's hit the guy, but instead of kind of ending the combat round, and he falls over backwards flat on his back, I'm just saying back up like a few milliseconds and have him reeling, head back, mouth open, you know, nose broken, not down on the floor.
But and you over. Doesn't he fall down in the next instance? Or do you mean when he starts his turn, he's mid-fall?
Well, if he starts his turn, then it's mid-fall.
But then wouldn't it just go, okay, you're reeling, you fall down, what do? I get up. Because you wouldn't really start that round. What do you do? And I said, well, am I still falling? Yeah. So I'm going to continue to fall? Yeah.
I would almost say you wouldn't have to...
But actually, I
would say not have to make the player make a roll.
Mm-hmm.
You could start the combat round instead of saying, okay, you're on your back.
Yeah.
And then you jump up.
Start it with a hit. You hit the ground. Yeah. What do you do now?
I'm thinking like that. Or start with the opponent's
hit.
Yeah, I say ouch. I say
ouch.
I don't know. This is one of the things that possibly sounded better in my mind.
Hmm. Yeah.
You guys are kind of poking holes in it.
No, plenty of holes to start with. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
I think maybe you can achieve your results by, you know, instead of having something like a D&D style where you get so many actions round, some are standard actions, some are minor actions, but just one action. You just get one action. What do you do? What do you do? And it's just very quick. You're jumping around as opposed to I'm going to draw my sword and then I'm going to strike. No, draw your sword, done. Move on. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
I think Champions broke down the combat round in, as you would expect, a very comic book style. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you had a speedster, they had more actions in that particular round, and they would just go at certain phases.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And knockback. All systems need knockback. I just love knockback.
Yeah.
Knockback.
Especially ultra real.
You guys were also talking about onomatopoeia.
Yeah. Depending on what tone of a game you wanted, I mean, you could go kind of, like, comical, you know, like early Batman thing, like pow, ding. Or, again, reading Civil War, I was thinking when Captain America kind of is getting shot at, there's all these little plink, 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 you know. And, you know, it was a still frame,
mm-hmm.
but the sound words, the onomatopoeia that they put down, obviously told the reader that things are happening in this frame, even though it's a still image. So, I don't know, I think that's a big part of comic books, too, that. And if the GM did that, it would lend it a more comic book-esque feel.
Mm. Yeah, I thought of making cards using onomatopoeia, like bang, pow, and also like speech bubbles and thought bubbles to give it a real comic book flavor, and the players would...
Hold it up over their head?
No. They would play it, and they would say how it would relate to what they're doing. For example, my spider sense is tingling, and that would give the guy who's playing the card, so he gets an extra action that could be related to their spider sense tingling.
That's really cool.
Yeah, something's not right here. So bang could be... Sorry, I keep cutting you out, Josh. Go on,
Josh. You don't want holes poked in yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just think a happy medium is available, because there are a couple of... onomatopoeic words in comic books that have pretty much entered every fanboy's lexicon. Bamf, snicked, thwip.
Yeah.
it's so much that they've actually become jokes within the media. For example, there's the cartoon Hulk versus Wolverine, and Sabretooth says to Wolverine, "Do you have any last words?" "Yeah, two. Snick, snicked." So you could still use them and not have it be, for want of a better term, corny.
Yeah.
And just have it as, you know, that's just whole part of the whole universe.
Yeah. Or bring that into it, you know? I mean, comic books are often corny. Play it up. Live with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's good.
You could do that, yeah.